You're listening to Spaced Out Radio with Dave Scott. Follow Dave on Twitter at Spaced Out Radio and on Facebook, Spaced Out Radio Show.
Welcome back to hour number two of Spaced Out Radio tonight. I am your host, Dave Scott. Thank you so much for being with us. Tomorrow night on the show, Teddy Hadiyaska is going to join us to talk about the Dyatlov Pass mystery. We get going at 9:06 Pacific, 12:06 a.m. Eastern at spacedoutradio.com. Hi to everyone listening in on our terrestrial affiliates, KDUN AM 1030 in Reedsport, Oregon, UPRN 107.7 FM in New Orleans, in Ridgecrest, California, KZFX 93.7 FM and WQEE 99.1 FM in Noonan, Georgia. On the digital side, hi to everyone listening in on Revolution Radio and Deep Talk Radio. Good to have you with us. Don't forget, all of our archives are free at youtube.com/spacedoutradio. Just do old Davey the favor, hit that subscribe button. The Desert Clam has set the password for tonight in the SOR Space Travelers Club. Spaghettification. Spaghettification is your password. The Clam sets a password each and every night right here on the mighty SOR. Our website is spacedoutradio.com, where we have a plethora of features for you. Rock out to Bumblefoot, go shopping at our Spaced Out Radio store, read up on the SOR Newswire brought to you by Captain Shirk, and so much more. We're talking UFOs in North America tonight. Researcher from newfors.com, that's NOUFORS.com, is Michel Deschamps. Been a couple of years since we had him on. He's filling in for our original guest who had to pull out earlier today. But nonetheless, we're having a lot of fun tonight. Michel, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dave. It's a pleasure to be back.
Now, Michel, in regards to Canadian UFOs, and this is kind of where I want to get a little bit deep into it. We've heard about Shag Harbor. We've heard about things like the Falcon Lake incident where Stefan Mikulak was hit by some sort of beam there. Those are two very, very prominent cases across Canada. Yet the majority of Canadians have no clue about them, much like our American brothers and sisters. Almost all of them know about what happened at Roswell. Or, you know, to think of the Mothman for a second, what happened at Point Pleasant, West Virginia.
Yeah.
You know, they love the legends and lore down there. Why up here in Canada have we not blown up these stories if they are that large?
Well, it's because of the number of witnesses. Stephen Mikulak was the only one to his encounter. Initially, before even the Colorado group got involved in the investigating, Shag Harbor, that one is kind of cool because as the Canadian Roswell, it wasn't the people that claimed it was a UFO. It was the RCMP because the people, as far as they were concerned, they thought it was a plane that crashed and they were expecting to recover survivors or dead bodies from the ocean. It's basically took me a while to get the one document where the word UFO was underlined twice in one of the documents. I'd gotten most of the documents from Christopher Stiles from Nova Scotia and Don Ledger, but the one document was missing, and I had to go online to find that one. And yeah, it's the government that labeled it a UFO, not the people. But the fact that the Roswell is so famous is because of the number of witnesses that one part of the story or another they were witness to. You had Frankie Rowe. She passed away a few years back. How they were threatened with death if they were ever to speak out because she had held the special piece that would fold up like foil and then you let it on a table and it flattens out like water. Those kinds of pieces there, that would be like the smoking gun. In Canada, yeah, you've got those two cases, and you also have Robert Childerhose, or Kilderhose, who was a pilot. He was doing a speed record flight from the east coast to the west coast, and as he got over Fort McLeod in Alberta, he photographed an object amongst the clouds. And so he took a photograph of him and his wingman, and then a photograph of this object, luminous blob of light amongst the clouds. That's another famous case. And soon after that, he actually would write huge write-ups in for newspapers or something. I have a big write-up about it because one of my friends who's into cryptids, he lives near Lake Simcoe, on my way down to on the way down to Toronto, and he had a huge collection of these news clippings from the Inquirer. And right. I have the very first article where Travis Walton and his crew got a check for the best story of 1975, and then I found this huge. I had to scan it in four sections because the article was so large about this pilot, this Canadian pilot, who was doing a speed test across the country, and with an F-86 Sabre, and took a picture of this UFO. I'm trying to remember any other cases. Oh, the other famous case also too is the giant UFO in the Yukon in 1996, December 11th. You know, this thing with the six best estimates, this thing was at least a mile and a half in width. You know, something that we'd consider a mothership, or obviously it could actually contain some of the smaller crafts. And that's another argument that people may have brought up before. You know, has anybody even asked the questions, do you think these small 40, 50 foot crafts could be interstellar? Some might be, but I think they're brought here by an aircraft carrier type object like the motherships. In a lot of reports, they're smaller in size, these exploration vehicles, as I call them. When I investigated Manitoulin Trace, a landing trace, in 1991, I spoke to Ted Phillips, who can basically, based on his multiple investigations into landing traces, he could pretty well match up the size of the object to the actual trace that's left behind. And when he saw my pictures, he says, yeah, those were probably two separate objects, one possibly assisting the other. And that's not the first time I've heard that kind of story, because in the Shag Harbor incident, they actually is revelation that there was a second object that was assisting the first one. And that one was tracked heading in another direction, or near the point where the U.S. actually had a listening post base on the shores. I think it was near Shelburne, I think. And so the traces kind of pretty well point to the fact in relation size of the objects. The motherships, I don't know if any of the motherships have ever landed. I mean, we've seen these large reports of these large triangles that hover motionless over somebody's house. There's this one friend of mine, a contact on Facebook. She lives in the Mont-Tremblant Provincial Park, or near there in Quebec. And she actually witnessed a large triangular object with three red lights on each corner. And I think the fourth light in the middle was also red, shining down solid columns of light. And it was hovering over her neighbor's house right across the street. So she had a clear view. The sad thing is she hid her kids in a bedroom. So the kids never got to see the most fascinating sight they could have witnessed in their lives, you know. But that was probably sheer terror or fear for something to happen. But there's been multiple cases. In 1952, there was a flyover, the North Bay base. 1952 actually was really big in the States as well. They had the Flatwoods Monster incident. They had the two consecutive weekends over Washington, D.C., where these objects would go away as the jets were screaming in. And the jets would do a couple of recon missions, see nothing, head back out. As soon as they were gone, the UFOs would come back. Many cases of that too, not just there, but elsewhere as well. Now, for the Canadian cases, unless you come across them in the newspapers or even the documents, like we were doing Freedom of Information Act requests way back in, well, I met my friend Todd Frazier from Kirkland Lake in 94 when he moved here permanently. And he was also interested in UFOs. And I happened to be at the reference library at that time doing research. So I got introduced by one of the librarians, and we started collaborating on stuff. And he was telling me about some of the reports in Kirkland Lake. And we started looking in the newspapers. And then when we decided to do Freedom of Information Act requests, we filed some papers. And the lady at the National Archives said, I don't know why you guys are bothering to do this when you can actually buy the reels, the microfilm reels. I said, really? I said, how many are there? Five. How much? $25 each. I looked at Todd and says, crap, we're buying them. So I bought them. And I don't even know how many documents per reels there are. But to scan them would be a big job. And when I created the website some years later, I found a batch of 5,000 documents, exactly the same ones, Canadian National Archives. And then I had those 5,000 divided up in several bundles. And then later on, I found 8,000, which included the original 5,000. So I said, well, here's a good sample of what Canadian documents look like. And that's how I was able to distinguish real documents as well from the fake one that was produced when the CARP Ontario UFO case came to light on Unsolved Mysteries way back in 1989. And then MUFON Ontario investigated that case and found it to be a hoax. And the sad thing is, Stephen Greer is peddling it as a back-engineered UFO case.
I want to ask you about Paul Hellyer.
Yeah.
A lot of people look at Paul Hellyer as the highest-ranked government official to ever come out and say UFOs are real. Yeah. Now, he was Canada's defense minister for one term of 4 years in the 1960s. However, it wasn't until the 2000s that he came out publicly saying, this is happening, this is real, this is what governments know about this. Yet in 1967, under his watch, there were three major incidents. One, there was a UFO landing pad that was created in St. Albert, Alberta, that he opened.
Yeah,
to celebrate Canada's 100th anniversary. Now, that's not a UFO incident, but kind of strange. The Falcon Lake incident with Stefan Mikulec happened under his watch. And shortly after he got out of office, within a month, Shag Harbor happened. All of this happened in 1967. And Hellyer, on this show, stated that when he was defense minister, he knew nothing about UFOs, never heard a thing, didn't hear of Wilbur Smith, nothing about any of this. Yeah. I find that very hard to believe, yet people like Grant Cameron say that Hellyer is telling the truth. What is your opinion of that?
Well, actually, I tend to agree with that. I think he didn't know much because his interest was not UFOs. His interest at that time was organizing the armed forces and anything that dealt with the military in terms of organization. I was just reviewing one of the things I noticed on my site. As a matter of fact, I have some of the late Errol Bruce Knapp's Strange Days Indeed episodes, but they're not the guests' names are not there. So I was working on that and listening to exactly a report about how they were talking about the National Press Club, one of the National Press Club press conferences, where they talked to De Brouwer, who was in charge of the Belgian Air Force at the time of the Belgian incident. And De Brouwer said that even his superior once came across a UFO report, and if it had nothing to do with the military, they would toss it in the garbage. So if a lot of documents never even came across the desk, or they came across the desk, but it was not his interest to actually look into that, especially if we didn't have an agency per se that actually looked into it, just like in the States, they have MJ-12 or whatever it is called now at that time. I mean, I can see the documents going to the wayside and a part of history just disappearing right there. I mean, that's why I've said many times that it'd be pretty hard to put together a history book, because history has been superimposed with other stories, and the real story, the real truth, has gone by the wayside, and these documents are part of that history. You know, it's sad, but I'm glad that somebody, maybe they did the wrong choice. They took Philip Corso's book. I have the book too. I read it, but it wouldn't have not have been the book that I would have sent Hellyer to look into this. I would have gotten him a copy of this one book, which I plan to get for all 13 of our library branches, and it's called UFOs and Government, historical inquiry. And this one here, this book here, is a must-read for anybody. It's an expensive book. It's about $35. It's fairly thick. It's the thickness of a Bible, but way bigger than that. And it basically is a book that was put together based on all the documents that were released due to the CIA, the lawsuit against the CIA in 1978 by CAUSE, the Citizens Against UFO Secrecy. It was a UFO group at that time. And like a large puzzle, they pretty well put all those documents in sequence and basically came up with this book, which talks about how the military handled the UFO situation from the get-go, or flying saucers back then, but yet would lie to the people and say there was nothing to this, and with the closure of Blue Book. But then you read the book and you see how they were shaking in their boots because it says, oh my God, it's not the Russians. It's not the Nazis. What is it? And so, and how they passed the buck as well. Some agency or military officer wouldn't want to deal with it. So, and they have all their photos. It's pretty cool to actually see, okay, who's this soldier? Who's that soldier? Well, they have their photos and their names. So now you can actually say, okay, this is Sergeant Quarles or Sergeant McCoy or whatever from Blue Book or whatever. And you find all these little gems. I mean, maybe Paul Hellyer didn't know about this, but a lot of people didn't even know about these documents that were just recently found a few years back. Rob Mercer is an investigator, researcher who actually found these documents on eBay.
Yes.
And the documents belonged. I have copies. I have clean copies.
Me too.
But he says, oh, you too? Oh, cool.
Yes.
And he said to me, just use the ones with my watermark. His name is watermarked across the documents diagonally. And he said, just use those on the website. But if you want some sets of some clean copies, I'll get some.
Yeah.
And those documents were left behind when actually they were supposed to be destroyed initially. But one of the members of Project Blue Book kept them as souvenirs. Now, when he sold his house, that box of documents was left behind. The new owner of the house found the boxes, kind of felt there was something important to them. So he decided to put up for sale on eBay. And then Rob Mercer found them, thank God. So the only sad thing is the documents are floating between being in part of the public domain or being destroyed. So with the watermarks, at first I didn't quite agree with that. But then once I saw the whole picture, I said, well, okay, as long as the watermark is not as dark, you can actually make out what the documents say. And in addition to this, for instance, in the documents that I initially got from the Fund for UFO Research, way before the FBI finally placed all 16 bundles on our own website, I had bought 900 files out of the 1,600 that the FBI now have on their website. And amongst those, I only had two teletypes about the famous Lonnie Zamora case of Socorro, New Mexico, 1964, April 24th. Well, now there's a bundle of 217 pages about that case alone. And so I got clean copies of that one, but also all the watermarked ones. And then having met J. Allen Hynek's daughter a few years back, by pure luck, found out that they have a camp in Blind River, which is about an hour and a half west of here. And it's where I'm going to look for Bigfoot and UFOs this summer. A lot of sightings there because there's a nuclear refinery that produces new radioactive pellets for the nuclear power plant located in Chalk River and Deep River down on the way to Ottawa from my place. In the other direction from going south to Toronto, you go southeast instead. You're going towards Ottawa. That's where Deep River nuclear power plant is located. And these pellets are being produced in Blind River. That's their magnet for the UFO sightings taking place over there. And my friend Joan Morningstar from Mississauga First Nation is sort of a movie star because her abduction case appeared on episode 5 of season 2 of Indians and Aliens, which is broadcasted on APTN Network. And so knowing that J. Allen Hynek had a camp there, or still has, probably owned by his sons, he had four sons and his daughter, I was just lucky to run into her there at a small out of the place art gallery, and she came all the way down from Boston, Massachusetts. So I asked Rob Mercer if you have, and I saw that he had personal notes by J. Allen Hynek. I says, if you can get me some clean copies, and if I bump into her again, because she told me how much she missed her dad, I could give them their father's notes. So all these little gems that you find. And I'm not surprised that, hell, you're maybe as interest is not there. It's like some people who actually you have never seen a UFO could be standing right next to you, and there's a major UFO sighting taking place, and for some weird reason, some people see it and some people don't. And so
I get that. I just don't believe for a second. And yeah. I'm not saying Paul Hellyer isn't telling the truth.
No.
All right. But I just can't believe for a second a person in his power with the Stefan Mikulak case happening under his watch, you know, opening a UFO landing pad, albeit it was for tourism purposes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then shortly after he leaves office, Shag Harbor happening, that he knows nothing. I have a very tough time believing that. I want to believe him. Good people such as yourself, Grant Cameron and others, said they believe him.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Just something seems a little off with that with me.
Well, you're right, because when I was at I was there at the University of Toronto in 2005, September 25th. When he first came out of the closet, as they say, and I have to tell you, I was excited just for the fact that he was coming out. At least maybe it's better late than never. But my friends were totally disdained with the whole thing because he said, "Yeah, since how could the Minister of Defense not know anything about UFOs?" And somebody had to provide him a UFO book in order to say, "Oh, wow, there is something to this, and they are as real as the planes flying overhead or your car sitting out in the street where you could go and thump it." So. It's like, yeah, I can understand that side too. So who knows? I mean, I have a hard time. Well, I work with people. I work with a flat earther. So I have to deal with that kind of stuff. There's a grade school a former classmate of mine that always has to put in his 2 cents when I put a post on the net. He doesn't believe in Bigfoot or UFOs or whatever. So there's people that are totally oblivious to the facts, and I may have talked back then, maybe not as extensively as I am doing now, but I remember in grade school, I mean, I must have talked about it, and yet never, obviously didn't convince him of the reality. And so, yeah, it's a kind of really weird situation there where this is the defense minister of Canada, and he should know more than what he does. But if, you know, at the same time, I can see it not being his interest at all, because all the kids, the younger people, the 25, 26-year-olds at work, all they talk about is sports. I can't stand sports because I classify that as being mass distraction to keep keep us entertained from looking at the more important things. You know, they can tell you the stats, they can tell you which general manager is being traded in and stuff, but yet UFOs, oh, it's kooky stuff. It's kook.
I get you right there. I'm going to get you to hold on right there, Michelle, because we're going to step out for a break here at the bottom of the hour. Michelle Deschamps from newfours.com is our guest, Canadian UFO Talk. And UFOs all night long. We're coming back right after this.
You're listening to Spaced Out Radio live with Dave Scott on the Deep Talk Radio Network.
We pass the halfway point of Spaced Out Radio tonight. Good to have all of you along for the ride, wherever you may be listening. I am your host, Dave Scott, sitting in the captain's chair of SOR headquarters. Remember, a good way to support what we do on this show is by going to spacedoutradio.com, clicking on our shop tab, and you picking out a t-shirt for yourself or someone you know, hats, hoodies, coffee mugs, socks, you name it, we got it. Once again, a great way to support what we do at Spaced Out Radio. Tonight we are talking UFOs with longtime researcher Michelle Deschamps, who is based out of Ontario in the east coast of Canada. And Michelle, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure. I just love this.
Oh, me too, my friend.
I miss live radio. It's always like I miss doing any radio. I actually was co-hosting a short half-hour show way back when at the university's radio station, CKLU. And it was fun doing it, but it couldn't last because it was getting too hard to catch my bus to go to work. Yeah.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. But right before the break, we were talking about Paul Hellyer, the former Canadian defense minister who in the last 15 years has come out basically saying that he believes that we have been visited by a minimum of 5 different species and that UFOs are here. They are real. And like I said earlier, I'm not sure if I completely buy his story that when he was in duty performing as Canada's defense minister back in the late 60s, that he knew nothing about this. I just do not believe that. But nonetheless, in regards to it, do you believe that there is a reasoning behind the fact that we have not had any other major politicians in the Western world come out and state what Paul Hellyer has stated?
It doesn't seem to be in the forefront of their mind, because if they were to come out and even reveal one little tidbit, people would demand to know the rest of the story. And the thing is, it's like they've got such cushy positions right now. If we suddenly got wind of the information that there's somebody out there that's more advanced than us that possibly know how to fix all our problems, like especially environmental, technological, and all that, why would we need the government for? We'd be ousting them and then maybe run the world ourselves or something. So they don't want to lose that position and that kind of ownership over the rest of us. As long as they can divide and conquer by having us distracted with other things, and they don't seem to mind the infighting, you know, like we still there's still wars occurring on this planet. And while that's occurring, it's distracting us from the more important questions as to who we are as a species. What is our real purpose? You know, I think about this every day. I says my purpose was certainly not to wind up working at Walmart, you know, for 20 years because I'm on my 20th year, or any of those people like working in mines and deep caverns and stuff. We should be thriving and not surviving and having an elite. There shouldn't be no elites. It should be everybody should be pretty well equal. If you had everybody had the same stuff, you wouldn't have thieves. Because the guy who's coveting what you've got next door wouldn't even have to go after that because he'd have enough money to buy his own stuff. The world is not the way it's supposed to be, and I guess they seem to like it that way, because as long as they have control over us, they've got their secured positions in government. But if something more powerful, or not necessarily invading, but more powerful and superior that can actually show us a better way of doing things, they obviously don't want it to happen, because there'd be collateral damage due to that first encounter, first contact, because religious groups would go all haywire, because, you know, religion for a long time actually led the way. It's what religion said we had to follow and believe. And the same came after that when it came to government and the more powerful corporations. Well, if you don't abide by the rules, you know, you're out. And we all need to survive and work for a living, as sad as it is. And we're the only species on this planet that has to pay rent. So, I you know, it's a sad state of affairs. And I don't know, it could not be changed overnight, even if something good or better would come along to change all that. Us getting accustomed to change sometimes is not an easy thing.
But you look at the list, and I'm looking on your website here. There have been a lot of prominent politicians who have come out and said they have seen things.
Yeah.
Whether it's Ronald Reagan. And let's focus on the United States here for a minute. Whether it's Reagan, whether it's the Kennedy brothers, Kissinger, Nixon. I mean, we all know the Nixon story where he allegedly took Jackie Gleason down to a military base to look at a UFO craft. Harry Truman, Fife Symington, which we just were talking about last week with the anniversary of the Phoenix Lights.
Yeah.
Barry Goldwater, Jimmy Carter admitted very publicly that he had UFO sightings. Dwight Eisenhower, well, there's the rumors about him. So people and politicians are talking about this where are we missing the boat between UFOs, politicians who have talked about this in public, as well as the medium not picking up the message?
Well, the people, first of all, have been so told to look the other way. So for people to even accept the word of a politician, since their actions sometimes actually betray them, and people realize, oh, the politicians are just as crooked as the lawyers next door or whatever. It's funny how they can believe in a lot of other things, but yet when it comes to UFOs, they won't even believe their own politicians, people that are retired. Or why don't they come out while they're in power? Well, because it would ruin their careers. And, you know, they've never done their research to find this out. Even at a smaller scale, you've had people who've lost their jobs or lost their wives, you know, their marriage breakups and stuff like that. And because of their UFO encounters, they have no idea how much worse it would be on a larger scale like that. When it's a politician that's involved, they usually tend to wait until their careers are over or they've retired before they spill the beans. Sometimes they do it during, like Carter. He didn't seem to be too afraid about coming out, and that 15 million people agreed with him that they'd had UFO encounters or they believed in the existence. And but for acceptance, I mean, it's a big pill to swallow. I mean, just look at 40 years of research on any part of any researcher. If somebody were to bother even looking through my site and realizing, first of all, there's not really any BS on there, a speculation. I mean, I wish I'd create a speculation page, but there was enough speculation. I didn't want to add any to the already existing plot. Just if somebody were just not really do research, because we've done the research and most of the research has been done. Whatever we've been able to attain is out there already. People just have to read the websites, the good websites. I mean, there's information out there that you can't trust, but it all depends, how does the researcher portray himself? Does he portray himself as a charlatan or somebody who wants to stick to the truth and is not in this for money? That's where I stand. I was recently accused of using publications to make money off my site. I barely make any money. I try to sell T-shirts on there that are kind of cool, and it's just to go back into the research or repair my car, like I told you earlier. But nobody makes money off of UFOs, and if they are, they're doing a disservice, because then people are they're coinciding the UFO interest with a money making scheme, and so it's even more mistrusting for them to say, well, there's reality to UFOs, people are making a buck off the thing. We're basically studying somebody else's vehicles. That's the way I reduce it to that, and it's kind of funny and ludicrous when you really think about it. You know, one day when all this is passed, I mean, we'll be laughing, looking back and laughing. I said, yeah, we were studying somebody else's vehicles and visits from other planets. It'll be like nothing. But until we reach that point, which I almost think now we never will, because the world is the way it is. And, even with these whistleblowers that are coming out, The media has been bought out by the ones who don't want the information out. There's people even within the government who want this desperately out, because, like I said before, this is such a big pot boiling on the stove right now, and you can have four or five of these people sitting on the lid trying to keep it shut, but the story's going to blow open, and the longer they keep the lie going, the worse it's going to be for them. Humanity will suffer in the process. You'll have people that will commit suicide rather than to believe in UFOs. You'll have other people, like the religious folks, will chastise people for blasphemy or of some kind, for saying, oh, aliens are satanic. You know, well, don't look there. Don't believe in that. I've been told that recently. Who's to say what's going to happen with all these whistleblowers and then if the people who have never looked into UFOs were even to find out that people have been killed over this? You know, I believe JFK was killed because of this. I believe Marilyn Monroe was killed because of this. One of her friends was killed 2 weeks before. She was an investigative reporter named Dorothy Kilgallen. She was investigating a UFO crash, which she thought was from the UK. She flies to the UK, finds out it was the Aztec New Mexico crash of 1948. She goes back to the States. She mentioned it to Marilyn Monroe. JFK was talking outer space affairs with the premier of Russia 10 days before he was assassinated. And then here comes these burnt memos, which indicate his Secret Service nickname, which was Lancer. And basically Lancer was going against the policy of the group and says there, you know, the pavement needs to get wet, which means another term for assassination. So you got all these things that are coming out to light now. And the FBI memo on Marilyn Monroe, and it basically does talk about alien crashes and alien bodies. If they can kill their own president, what else can they do? So it's funny. You have one camp on the inside somewhere that wants the truth out, and then you've got the other ones that at all cost, including lives, they want this kept a secret as long as it possibly can be. And sometimes it seems to work on their side because the media is not even looking into this. They're not covering any of this. I only get calls for the media if it's a slow news week, you know, and yet it could be a ha-ha piece, although I've seen the ridicule dwindle over the last 10 years, 10 to 20 years. You know, some will still do tongue in cheek at the end of their reports when you watch Fox News or whatever. But it's gotten serious because since the Phoenix Lights, you got Kurt Russell that came out as an eyewitness, and you also had Alice Cooper saw a similar object 3 years later. And so, you know, these are iconic people, actors and singers that we look up to. So if people won't look up for the politicians for the truth, maybe they'll finally pay attention to some of the other celebrities that have seen UFOs and say, you know, there may not be such craziness with this after all. You know, it's too many people are reporting the same similar things. And then you talked earlier about how Paul Hillier mentioned there was five alien beings. Well, is it Clifford Stone that said the military says they've cataloged 52 species? I've cataloged 85. Well, 86 if you count the only one photo that was ever taken of an alien being by a police officer in Alabama in 1973. And people will look at the picture and say, oh, it looks like one of those firefighters in a foil suit. I says, yeah, but this thing outran a cop car through the pasture. It's pretty damn fast, freaking, and those suits are freaking awkward. If you ever saw like firefighters wearing those aluminum suits, you can't run with those things, plus all the equipment they have to carry. But this thing was like fast, and he photographed it at 10 feet, 20 feet, 50 feet. And years ago, when I first got on the internet, there was a show called program called Fire Talk, where you could talk to anybody in the States anywhere for free. And the guy who actually investigated the case sent me an actual a slide of the actual negative strips in color. And so I have that photo, like super large photo, and I took the best frame to reproduce that. And then I separated those close encounters of the third kind from the close encounters of the fourth kind, the beings that are seen during abduction cases. Those are the repeat offenders. Those are on a separate page because I want people to make a distinction that, there have been at least 85 species that were only seen once, sometimes twice, and never seen again. They land, they take a plant sample, animal sample, possibly human, and then they let go, and then they're gone. My uncle, my late uncle who passed away, he had seen two of these little beings. And their vehicle was a ball of fire sitting on the snow. They went outside after, no snow melted down to the grass, no footprints. And then I read about all these flying ufonauts that actually can hover inches off the ground, not leaving any footprints. So, you know, there is, but thank God for the landing cases, the ones that did leave physical evidence. There's physical evidence to study, or at least to research the the study's already been done, or the research, the radioactive samples have been taken. Just like at this landing site on Manitoulin there with my friend Keith Size, a retired Ontario Provincial Police officer who investigated this one landing case on Manitoulin. And I found this spread. This spread was in an old UFO journal from Canada. And this is dated the late 80s or the early 80s. And I'd never seen this one. I'd heard about it. I'd heard that there was at least three different types of landing sites on Manitoulin. One I investigated, and apparently I was the only civilian investigator on that one. Although somebody claims that two military people came after I was on site.
Right.
And
right.
I'm not sure about that because the area is out of the way. It's like quarter mile off the road, and you can't see the landing site next to the road. If it had been a hoax, I would have placed it right where it was visible for people to drive by. But this was on somebody's private property that they only checked once a week.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, in regards to some information that I was able to find out.
Okay.
And we're getting a little bit of feedback, so I'm going to get you to turn your speaker down just a little bit or move away from your microphone. But in regards to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, I didn't realize until I found out this information that they play a much larger role in the field of ufology than what I originally knew or anticipated. Mm. And that is that every UFO that gets called in to the RCMP is literally put on a high priority level that has to be immediately shipped to headquarters in Ottawa, which is Canada's capital.
Yep.
And then from there, it immediately gets shipped to NORAD at Cheyenne Mountain, Colorado. So we got about 4 minutes here before we got to go to break. And I'm wondering, in regards to Canadian UFOs, have you ever talked to RCMP officers who even like to take this type of duty when it comes to this? Because it does get very, very hasty very quickly when it comes to the military.
Yeah, well, in regards to Mr. Size, Keith Size, there, he told me the story before. I'll be recording him in about a week or so. But it says here in the article that Mr. Size reported, it says, following police procedure, telephoned Canada Forces Base Falconbridge to report the incident. And then he received a call back from North Bay, and then from Dr. McNamara at the National Research Council in Ottawa. So there is a procedure for this stuff, which I didn't think. Well, Ontario Provincial Police are probably different than the regional police, but I'd have to talk to regional police officers, because a lot of them in the 70s were the initial eyewitnesses to some of the sightings here. And I also know one of them who's also retired, and I'm chasing after him right now to get the story on how they vectored on a UFO that was maneuvering between three sets of different streets where three cop cars were located. So if in regards to that and the government, it's kind of neat that you see this stuff now, because otherwise you wouldn't know what the procedure would be for the police to report anything. And yet when I called the police, because initially I thought that's what the police to report them, they seemed to just give me they gave me the impression that they were just keeping me on the line to determine whether I was nuts or not. And then that's when I decided, well, where am I going to report the sighting after that? Because I knew it wasn't the police department.
Right.
You know,
well,
so
I actually talked to an officer about this, and I was actually quite surprised when I asked him about what the protocol was for UFOs. And instead of laughing at me, his response was in the air or on the ground.
Mm. Wow.
And then after him and I talked about that a few months later, I actually happened to run into an RCMP dispatcher who was stating who stated that his entire story was true, but that she added the caveat that the minute a UFO report comes in to 911 or to the non-emergency line, that they immediately have to place that file on the staff sergeant's desk, and immediately it goes as top priority outside of any other call that is happening at that time.
Well, so see, yeah. I relayed earlier about the urgency of how important this is. Like, I mean, it does. Well, maybe in modern day times, we'd have to say that these sighting reports rate higher than the H bomb, because we don't use H bombs anymore. We use probably something even worse. But obviously, there's a higher priority for these UFO reports. And it's funny that is not publicly known.
Absolutely.
Because people would regard this and say, okay, well, there's got to be truth to this then, because if the police are taken seriously. That's one of the reasons why I even bought this one book that nobody would thought, I guess, any civilians would buy. And it cost me almost like $400 or $500. And it's an American book,
Well, you know what, Michelle? I'm going to get you to wait on that because we will take that after the break here at the top of the hour. Michelle Deschamps is our guest tonight on Spaced Out Radio. He is a UFO researcher out of the East Coast of Canada. And we're going to get more into UFOs with Michelle. His website, newfors.com. That's NOUFORS.com. If you want to check him on out, I suggest you do. We'll be back with hour number three right after this.